Good morning. This is Sunday Magazine. With me on the phone this morning is Dr. Nash Gabriel from the Gabriel Cancer Center. And we're going to talk about an interesting and somewhat controversial topic today. Dr. Gabriel, thanks for joining me.
Thank you. Good morning to you and to our friends, the listeners to WHLO and to our Sunday Magazine.
You sent me along a letter that you had written, and it's about the Supreme Court ruling last month that ends a monopoly by a company over testing for a gene that indicates for breast cancer.
Right. this is to do with the genetic test. We call it BRCA1 and BRCA2. That's BRCA1 and 2. Patients or people or men, women who carry that mutation, they have up to 75% lifetime risk of developing breast cancer and about 45% lifetime risk of developing ovarian cancer.
And, of course, in addition to the Supreme Court ruling, this was also in the news last month because of Angelina Jolie's decision, because she has this gene in her family, apparently, that she would undergo a mastectomy just to prevent future breast cancer.
Correct. She is a carrier of the gene, and obviously she carries from I don't know which side of her family. In my opinion, rightly, she opted to have a mastectomy done. And then a week later, the Supreme Court ruled that a gene that's naturally occurring cannot be patented. Of course, we're all happy that there will be more options for us, for other laboratories to do the genetic testing, because as it stands now, only Myriad Genetics can do this test, which means basically they have a monopoly. And John, this is one of the challenges that capitalism faces, is the strike between free market and potential of monopoly.
Well, it is a, I guess, like you said, a challenge, and it's a controversy in some ways because, like you said, this is good for patients, I guess, and that this testing will probably be a lot less expensive now that there's not a monopoly on it. But what's the other side of the coin?
The hope is if other labs will come, of course, the other labs will have to come with a different way of testing because that's not patented or was not patented. So if the labs come with a different way of testing, the hope is that there will be some competition and that competition will indeed drive the price down because it is expensive. Let's say I see a patient and there is a lot of family history and I suspect that this is maybe one of those BRCA1 or BRCA2. You first test the blood of the patients or even the saliva because any cell in the system will have that gene. And with the first test, when you identify the gene, it costs about $4,000. Once you identify the gene and you go to the other family members, it's only about $300. So we're hoping that it will be less expensive, and in fact it should be. I just happen to be reading now the book written by the Craig, who's the guy who designed who had his whole genome mapped. What's his last name? I'm reading his book, and it used to cost hundreds of thousands. In fact, it cost about $200 million for his company to map the human genome. And as you know, at the same time, the U.S. government cost $3 billion with a B. And now the talk is that within a matter of a couple of years, we will have the human genome for your gene makeup, my gene makeup, probably costing less than $1,000. So why would it be that detecting one out of the 40,000 genes, why would that be costing so much? So there's no doubt it was expensive. It is expensive, and the hope is that the price will drop. But the negative side of it is if we don't patent these procedures or these genes, what would be the incentive for entrepreneurs to try to discover other genes? I'll give you an example. We think in our center we do keep track of all the patients who have family history, we have family trees, and we have published our work in the past, and we plan to publish additional findings. In our work, we think that about 23% of all cancers have genetic, have inheritance bases, right? Whereas if you take only the families who have the BRCA positivity, meaning that the families that have cancer because of BRCA mutation, those constitute less than 5% of all cancers. What does that mean? That means we are still dealing with 20% of the cancers that are have inheritance bases, and yet we don't know the gene that's causing that.
But if you were able to discover that gene, you potentially could save people's lives by warning them ahead of time that they would be very much at risk for cancer.
Exactly. Exactly. And I am hoping that we will find a way that we will give incentive to people to work on those genes. Some people say, well, the government will do that. Well, we cannot really depend on the government doing everything, right? Free markets seem to work better in all aspects. I guess the government can give grants to people, but where have we been? I mean, the BRCA gene was discovered in 1994, and we haven't discovered many other genes since then.
So, you know, as you mentioned, you've kind of set up it's a good thing that it'll save money for patients, but how are you going to get companies to, you know, have an incentive to do more research if you've taken away some of their profit motive? What do you think? Do you have any ideas on, you know, how that could be done?
The only way I can think of discovering a new genes that cause cancer would be through non-for-profit donations to research institutions, that they will do the research and discover those new genes, and immediately once you discover them, you make that information public for everybody, which means these laboratories and companies will grab the gene and do the testing and start making profit of it the profit will be made because of the donations done by, let's say, the Carnegie or the Bill Gates Foundation or the Warren Buffett Foundation, whichever. I think that will be the only source. Of course, universities, and they have their researchers, they get grants from the governments, and I hope that the government, especially the NIH, will be more generous in awarding grants specifically targeting this. That's my hope, because again, private industry will not have the economic incentive to do the. It's very hard work. It's almost like looking for a needle in a haystack. Exactly, it's like that when you try to discover a gene. It's just not, I don't know, I mean, I never question the wisdom of the Supreme Court justices, but I just don't get this one. I think it was a little bit extreme.
What all goes into, like you said, this research that is looking for a needle in a haystack? I mean, you're trying to discover a gene that points towards a high risk of a cancer.
What it involves is imagine if you take a piece of if you take the DNA of any human cell and stretch it out, it's about a mile long. And the mutation is only can be, if you take that, imagine that mile long, the mutation is only in the 0.1 millimeter of that mile. Go and find it. Right.
It literally is a needle in a haystack.
Yeah, in fact, once I was listening to a lecture given by the person who actually identified the BRCA gene, and we were all impressed that how could you identify this? And he just stood up, he said, well, just luck. He stumbled on it because it's so difficult to identify.
You try enough things.
Now we have more sophisticated sequencing machines that can detect the mutations and see the sequences of the DNA at a very, very fast rate. I mean, in fact, that's the basis why we were able to map the human genome back in 2002 by two entities. One was a private entity, and the other one was the Human Genome Project headed by Dr. Collins. Because they made those sequencing machines that are super ultra fast. And in fact, John, soon those machines will be sitting in the in regular doctors' offices soon, meaning maybe 1 or 2 decades. Just imagine you walk in the office and they take a drop of blood from you or maybe even a swab of your saliva, run it through the machine, and that sequencer will tell, I don't know, a few hours, a few days, will tell everything about you. Everything that's known, that risk for diseases, mutations, whether there is risk for Alzheimer's disease, and we are discovering more and more of those. It's not only about the cancer, of course. There's a lot of research done to see, is Alzheimer's disease genetic? And if so, where is the gene? There was one study published recently, I believe it was in Lancet, the English medical journal, that showed that depression and schizophrenia, they identified a gene mutation. If you have that gene, you are way more likely to be depressed. So if you think about it, health and disease, health is a lot of it, if not most of it, is genetic. And when we have all the sequencing available, you know, we don't have to carry our stethoscope and the stuff. We just look at the genes and, okay, you are high likelihood to get heart attack or stroke or be nasty to your wife, misbehaving yourself, your language is not good. All those are genetically mediated characters. In fact, there is a gene discovered about called the cheating gene, where a species of rats have that gene, and when they have it, they cheat on their spouses. And that gene was transferred to another species of rats who were not cheaters, and when the gene was transferred to them, they become cheaters.
So let me play devil's advocate here. Are you saying that, our genes determine our behavior, our life? Basically, we have no control over the way things are going to go? It's just
very limited control. Our behavior, our body language, our thought process, to me, it's all genetic. There are people who talk now about the God gene. There are people who have the genetic makeup that makes them believer in God and deity and the metaphysics.
And people who don't have the gene tend to be atheists, is what you're saying.
Exactly. You tend to only believe in what's physical, what's tangible, what's visible, what's detectable. And you go on and on. And you know, psychologists will tell you, no, behavior is only 50% genetic and 50% environment. I don't know how we come with the number 50%. In fact, I just finished writing a book about cancer inheritance, and one chapter is devoted to this. And that is there anything that we say or do or think that is not genetic? Just look at yourself, John. Look at yourself in the mirror and compare when you comb your hair, when you shave yourself, and compare to how your dad did those or your mom did similar acts. Very, very similar. The body language is also genetically mediated.
It's something we don't think about, how much our how much the way we live our lives is influenced by those that came before us.
Right. And a lot of us, you know, when you have really good kids, people always compliment you, oh, you are such a good parent, you're a good parent, you're a good dad, you raise your kids. You know, I think we take too much credit for the success of our kids or for being behaved or misbehaved. Congressman Regula told me once when I was complimenting him about how young he looks, he said, the best gift I got from my parents was a nice set of DNA.
There you go.
He's absolutely right. In fact, you look at longevity. It runs in families. There are families where people just, the whole family members, they just live to the age of 90 or 100. And there are some who just don't make it to the 60 or 70.
I suppose, you know, to as a doctor, though, you've got to, even though you're saying that a lot of what happens to us is influenced by our genes, ultimately there is some of what happens that we have some influence over, and that's where you're trying to research the genes so that you can predict the tendencies and maybe, you know, influence things to some degree, help people live a little bit longer.
That's exactly the task. Is although these are things are all imprinted in the genes, we have the ability, the technology, and the knowledge that we can maybe outsmart the genes. Example, Angelina Jolie, she had the gene. She knew that the risk of breast cancer is 80%. So what did she do? Remove the breast tissue. basically her risk of developing breast cancer is down to zero. And if she removes her ovaries, which I think she should, also the risk of ovarian cancer will drop to zero. Part of my job, actually, is when I identify these families, I sit down and talk with the families, usually one-on-one, or maybe sometimes the whole family as a group, and tell them about the risks, and I do even mathematical models. What is the probability? And you can do that less accurately when you don't have a gene, because when you don't have a gene, you don't know, right, whether the patients have the gene or not. But at least we help them in how to prevent cancer. So if somebody carries, if there is a gene in the family that makes them susceptible to cancer, listen to this one, John. Those families, their risk of getting cancer from environmental factors is much higher than other people exposed to the same environment. Meaning, if there is a genetic predisposition in the family, anybody who smokes have a high risk of getting lung cancer. But if there is genetic predisposition and you smoke, it's not doubled, it's compounded.
And that's where that combination of genetics and environment, you're saying, you know, they could get cancer even if they don't smoke, but it's, you combine those two things and it's like,
well said.
It's compounded.
Well said, exactly. And our job is when you present this information to patients, it's profound. Because you're scaring them, but rightly so, you should. So that you give them a better incentive to avoid those risks, maybe cut back on smoking or quit smoking altogether, more healthy diet, more vegetables, lose some weight, whatever things that can cause cancer, then that will help. The other thing we do, remember one thing, John, the cheapest medicine in the world in history is the best medicine so far until now. And that's called aspirin. You take one aspirin a day, you lower your risk of prostate cancer, breast cancer, colon cancer, pancreatic cancer, and ovarian cancer.
Very interesting. And like you said, a lot cheaper than pretty much any other medicine.
Yeah, it's about 1 cent a pill, I think. And you wonder sometimes, why don't we advertise this? Well, because it is a generic drug, generic. Nobody has the, except for the, if you care about the public health and, you know, then you will talk about it, you advertise it. It's a very good drug. I wish I could take it. I can't because I'm allergic to it.
Oh, wow.
In fact, I wish there is a way I can prevent that allergy because it's a good drug. It prevents all cancers or helps prevent or lower the risk. It prevents strokes, prevents heart attacks. And again, these are the things that I discuss with our patients and their families when there is family. I take it very, very seriously because I still get upset that I see patients who come with advanced incurable cancer who have strong family history and nothing was done.
So
and I cannot blame the medical profession for that. I think it is the individual responsibility.
I guess that's probably a good thing to take away from this is, you know, genetic testing is going to advance in the coming years. But even right now, if you know that you have cancer in your family, it's, you know, it would be in your best interest to look into that, visit a doctor and, you know, see what you can do to help prevent the chance of you getting cancer in the future.
Right. And the most important part people need to know is, even if you do, if the genetic test, let's say you have strong family history of cancer, and then they do genetic testing in the family and comes back negative, you are not off the hook. Because we only detect what we know.
Right, and there might be genes out there that you haven't discovered yet, is what you're saying.
It's not might be, there are. It's a matter of, they are less impressive in the penetrance, meaning if you have the BRCA gene, there is about 80% risk of breast cancer. But let's say if you have one of the mismatch repair genes, we call this Lynch syndrome after Dr. Lynch. If you have one of those, the risk of breast cancer is only 40%. So when you, and those are difficult to detect genes, and there are many, many more that we still don't have the technology to do them on a commercial scale, and many, many more that we haven't even discovered. So the most important part to me in the family history of cancer is that a professional talks to you and analyzes it professionally, somebody who is not only knowledgeable about it, but also have passion about it, because with that comes with the advice, with the methods to prevent, methods early detection, and advantage of all those, and you can do yourself a good favor by seeking such help just once. In fact, you don't have to do it every year. One time, somebody will sit down and analyze the family and tell you you have risk or not, because if you don't, then you can do whatever you want, right?
Well, exactly. Those environmental factors still play in there. But, boy, if you have a genetic predisposition, like you said, it's doubly or triply important.
Yes.
Dr. Gabriel, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with me this morning. And, boy, some interesting information. And hopefully our listeners will take away the message that they need to think about these things and care about their health.
Take aspirin every day. All right, John. Thanks.